The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Appreciate you being part of the show. And it's great to welcome back to the show. He joins us every week. He's the guy at the Media Research Center who cooks up great videos to cook the libs. He's Bill D'Agostino on X at @band_Bill. What's up, my man? Hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty good. How's yours?
Well, listen, it was good because I got to watch the Sunday shows, and it was fun watching that tubby J.B. Pritzker get cooked by Shannon Bream and Kristen Welker. That was fun. Or Kathy Hochul getting cooked by Shannon Bream. So that was a joy. I enjoyed that. I wanted to share with you, by the way, Nancy Pelosi, the vampiric one, she tweeted out the following, and she's getting what we call ratioed pretty hard over this. So she said, Donald Trump delayed deploying the National Guard on January 6th when our Capitol was under violent attack and lives were at stake. Now he's activating the D.C. Guard to distract from his incompetent mishandling of tariffs, health care, education, and immigration, just to name a few. Chief Stephen Sund, who was the former chief of the United States Capitol Police, responded to her and said the following. Ma'am, it is long past time to be honest with the American people. On January 3rd, I requested National Guard assistance, but your sergeant at arms denied it. Under federal law, 2 U.S.C. 1970, I was prohibited from calling them in without specific approval. That same day, Carol Corbin at the Pentagon offered National Guard support, but I was forced to decline because I lacked the legal authority. On January 6th, while the Capitol was under attack, and despite my repeated calls, your sergeant-at-arms again denied my urgent request for over 70 agonizing minutes, running it up the chain for your approval. When I needed assistance, it was denied. Yet when it suited you, you ordered fencing topped with concertina wire and surrounded the Capitol with thousands of armed National Guard troops. So interesting that the Democrats are so upset by the president wanting to take and fight crime in the nation's capital. There was a time, Bill, I remember when Bill Clinton sent in the Federales to go after the Crips and the Bloods, and Democrats actually cheered him on. You remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally remember it too well. I was
still pretty young. Yes, I know, but you know the history of it, right? Like, if I said,
do you remember
the Kennedy assassination? Like, you would remember that occurred, right?
I'm not suggesting you were
in Dealey Plaza that day, kiddo. But you know,
I didn't want to perpetrate any millennial age based stolen valor. You know how
we appreciate that.
I will say I was alive for a brief period during the USSR, so I've got that going for
good.
Me, at least.
Wonderful. And back when MTV played music. So look at that.
Yeah, so I'm told. it's incredible how like overtly pro crime the entire left wing DC establishment has become. Seemingly the only law enforcement event in history that they can look back at and say, yeah, the police were the good guys, is January 6th.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's basically it. And it's weird. I mean, like everything that quote that you just read said is like all of that, not even withstanding, like all of that aside, because that's factually true. Like everybody kind of recognizes that at this point, I think. It's sort of weird for her to conflate this with January 6th, because January 6th is when she claimed we needed more, right? Yeah. And now it's like, no, once again, back to no policing. We don't need policing anymore. The only thing that we needed policing for ever was January 6th.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a great observation. It's the one day in American history, besides 9/11, I guess, where Democrats applaud the actions of law enforcement.
Depending on the Democrat, right? Because we do have some Democrats who've described 9/11 as some people did something. So that one is iffy these days.
That was the brother lover, right? Ilhan Omar, who
that
said
was.
That?
Yeah.
Yes. That was pillow talk between her and her brother. Some people did something.
That's right. You know, people rip on her for that. Who knows? Maybe her brother's a great guy, you know?
Well, I mean, who are we to judge?
Sorry.
now, some of the meltdown now. And what I love, too, is this idea that there's no crime in D.C. Like suddenly now the left right. is finding that there's it's like the safest place on earth. And maybe every now and then somebody steals like a gumball from an arcade vending machine. But beyond that, D.C. is basically nirvana.
Right. Yeah. Occasionally somebody in D.C. does something. But other than that, it's basically fine. And I love we'll get into this more, I'm sure. But the cooked crime stats that got the police commander fired, even under those stats, it's like, OK, so carjackings are down, say, like, what is it? It's like 26% or something, according to his numbers.
Yeah.
And so it's like, OK, so therefore, all of the other carjackings don't matter. Right. Like, is that the solution to help? My car was stolen. Well, you know, carjackings are down. Oh, OK. Whew. Thank yeah. goodness. Never mind. I'm all set now. Yeah. Right. I mean, would Henry Cuellar appreciate that? You remember that he was carjacked in D.C. Like, mm-hmm. what was that? Maybe 2 years ago or something. That was on the block that not the exact block, but on the street that my girlfriend was living on at the time. And I was like, look, you got to get out of there, because if a congressman can get carjacked, you're just, you know, you're one of us. You're one of the little people. So what safety do you have?
Yeah, it's a great point. Well, here's CNN's Kevin Liptak citing those crooked D.C. crime stats that got the police commander fired last month as evidence that D.C.'s crime stats are not cooked. Cut 37.
And you really did hear the president paint quite a dystopian picture of Washington, D.C., saying that it was overtaken by violent gangs, by bloodthirsty criminals, using this imagery that doesn't necessarily comport with a lot of people's experience in this city, but also with what the actual numbers show. You know, statistics do show that violent crime in Washington is falling since reaching a peak in 2023. The president's aides dispute some of those figures. You heard the president come out saying that some of those statistics might have been cooked. But really, when you look at the numbers, what the president is painting is an image that doesn't necessarily match up with what the figures show, but also with what a lot of people's experience in the city is.
So, Bill, break it down for us.
Yeah, so I love that he turns the D.C. police commander getting fired for cooking crime statistics, which, again, this was like, when was that reported? July 18th, I think. So literally yeah. less than a month ago. He turns that into, well, some of the president's aides dispute those statistics. It's like, okay, does anybody else dispute those statistics, Kevin? Maybe the people responsible for firing the police commander because they found that he cooked those statistics. Right. So there's that. That's what that gets twisted into is, well, these idiot right wingers say it's not true. But then he sandwiches that between him saying the statistics show that Trump is wrong. And it's like, which statistics are those, Kevin? The cooked ones, the ones yeah. that were cooked, those statistics say that. Right. Yeah. That sounds like something that cooked statistics would do is not comport with reality. And then thirdly, there's also he mentioned this twice. The idea that people's experiences on the ground don't comport with what the president is saying. Am I the only one who remembers when D.C. police went around, I think it was like last year, telling people that crime was down, and everybody's response was, what are you talking about? Is this like, is this some kind of out of season April Fool's joke? You're kidding me, right?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because over at ABC, Kyra Phillips says nobody in D.C. actually feels safe. This is cut 38.
We've been talking so much about the numbers, and yeah, usually that's how you play devil's advocate, is you talk about, oh, well, stats say crime is down. However, I can tell you firsthand here in downtown D.C. where we work, right here around our bureau, just in the past 6 months, you know, there were two people shot. One person died literally two blocks down here from the bureau. It was within the last 2 years that I actually was jumped walking just two blocks down from here. And then just this morning, one of my coworkers said her car was stolen a block away from the bureau. So we can talk about the numbers going down, but crime is happening every single day because we're all experiencing it firsthand while working and living down here.
And by the way, Bill DiAgostino, Media Research Center, ABC News's bureau is in a nice part of D.C. in Northwest, not far from Union Station. It's a very nice part of the city where people work and live, and you know what I mean? So if it's happening there, what the hell's happening in the hood?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, this is not like the part of New Haven where Yale is, right, where you venture off campus and suddenly you get like stabbed and mugged three times. This is all of these news bureaus are actually in like pretty good walkable areas of DC, and it's happening there. But I do have good news for her there. Kevin Liptak says that she's wrong, so there is that. There is that, at least.
Yeah. Sorry, Kira. The numbers say that never happened to your coworker, and her car is just fine.
Right. Okay. Right. So, I mean, that's good news for her coworker, right? And
yeah.
And this is that like anecdotal piece that Liptak was citing, right? As he was like, well, people don't feel like crime is down. And then I love the juxtaposition, because here's Kira Phillips saying the exact opposite. She says, well, look, the numbers may say that, but nobody feels that way.
Yeah.
So I think that Kevin Liptak needs to venture outside of CNN headquarters and talk to a couple of people on the street and see what they think. See what they think about whether crime is up or down.
He would, as long as it's not the CNN DC bureau, because he's terrified to go there. So as long as it's the Atlanta bureau, he's okay. He'll be fine. You know,
he doesn't want to get carjacked. So.
No, he'll make sure they send him a car so that he doesn't have to worry about that. But it is an interesting point, because I don't know how these crime stats are put together. But I heard the head of the D.C. police union was on with Sandra Smith earlier today in Fox News, and he was going on about how people are not getting prosecuted. So I don't know how these numbers are factored in, because if the cops, first of all, can't arrest juveniles, then none of those crimes are being reported. And he said, we have to ask permission, and 9 times out of 10, we're not given the permission. So none of those crimes are being reported. Secondly, if a cop makes an arrest, but the prosecutor does not prosecute, and then the charges are dropped, does that crime get counted? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, so I don't know the answer either. My guess would be no, because you can't legally say that somebody's guilty of a crime if they haven't been convicted, right? And so I'm almost positive that crime statistics go off of convictions, not of who's charged and who's not, right? Because if somebody's found innocent, or if somebody's found not guilty, then you can't say that they committed the crime. Therefore, maybe the crime wasn't committed. That's totally layman's analysis, though. Obviously, nobody hold me to that. Please don't sue, et cetera.
Yeah, but, I guess it's a matter of whether or not they're reporting arrests, or they're reporting crimes that were prosecuted and there was a verdict, either through a plea or through a trial. And I don't know the answer to that, but it'd be interesting to see the statistics on arrests versus prosecutions in a lot of these blue cities, because the same complaint keeps coming up time and again, which is the cops are arresting people and then they're back on the streets. So even if the data is showing arrests, so what? Because they're not getting prosecuted. You know what I mean? And so even if you were to release just raw numbers on just arrests that were made, even that doesn't tell the full picture, because if you then compare it to prosecutions, then that number is going to drop dramatically. Because I've heard so many Philly cops tell me they lock people up and the next day they're back on the street. And it's the same problem that the DC guy was saying as well.
Right. Yeah. It's basically DAs that intentionally let people off, and then even if you get a DA who wants to prosecute, you might get a radical judge who's like, crime is a violent crime is a social construct, right? Isn't that what Zohran Mamdani said? Violence is a social construct, right? So I mean, the more people like that you have in the legal system, and the more people like that you have working as like DAs and prosecutors, then the less any of these crime stats mean anything, and the more proven criminals you're going to have wandering around just completely free, right? It's basically catch and release at that point.
Sure.
And I don't know. All of this kind of reminds me, I forget the name of the app. Somebody created this app, like, this was, I'm going way back now. This was like 2018 or something. But it was like a crime app that showed where like what were the hot spots of crime in a given city or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some news crew working for, I forget the outlet, I think it was like Salon or something, said that, okay, this is racist. We're going to send out a news crew to like interview people to prove that this app is basically just racist. And their van got broken into, yes, and all of their equipment got stolen.
I remember that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was something. My buddy as a cop says that, you know, a crime is reported as a crime. So whether there's a prosecution or not. So that's helpful. Right. But again, I'd like to compare that with the prosecutions, even the arrests that are prosecuted versus even whether there's a conviction or not, just whether the DA decides to go forward and actually charge somebody with that crime, because it would answer a lot, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Something that is useful also is the like crime victimization survey. Mm-hmm. Although I think that's only on a national scale. I don't know if they have that like city by city. But I do know that as we've gotten more like Soros type prosecutors and Soros type judges and DAs and whatnot, that the deviation between like convictions and the National Crime Victimization Survey has only like proportionally increased, right? Which suggests that it's a pretty reliable metric, because obviously you would get faultier numbers, you'd get fewer convictions with a lot of these very soft on crime officials.
The biggest takeaway I got from listening to the guy who's the president of the DC Police Union was that in the last 5 years, they have passed so many laws in the District of Columbia that ties the cops' hands and lets juvenile offenders, even for shootings, walk free, that the cops can't do their job. There's 950 vacancies, 2 million hours. I could not believe this. I had to listen to it twice to make sure that I heard it correctly. 2 million hours a year of mandatory overtime because they are so understaffed. So the head of the police union in D.C. is like, bravo, we welcome this. This is great. Bring it on.
Incredible.
They're grateful for the help. And every normal human being with a brain would be grateful for the help, because every police department in America is strained for either manpower or budgets or both. And so if somebody's offering resources on another person's dime, on another spreadsheet, then they take it because they need it and they're grateful for it.
Yeah, no, it's free real estate, right? I mean, yeah, it's their job, ostensibly at least. To the best of their ability, they're still trying to carry it out, but they're, as you said, their hands are tied. Their job is to prevent this stuff, right? And so if the federal government is coming in to help, I mean, I don't know why some of these liberal shows are inviting some of these people on expecting them to be like, oh, no, please don't come assist us, right? Don't come in on your own dime and help us do our job. That would be terrible. Like, what are you thinking? Of course they need help, right? They want all the help that they can get. Until crime is eliminated, right? Until there's zero crime, there's always more work for them to do, theoretically.
Yeah. Yeah, and the George Soros-funded woke prosecutors like Krasner and the guy in D.C. and who's an attorney general, but Alvin Bragg. I mean, you know, they're notorious for not going after the kind of low level quality of life crimes that destroy cities, and they just won't touch it. All right, moving on to another topic, Bill, and that's redistricting. We're still dealing with the Texas Democrats who fled. Over the weekend, Tubby J.B. Pritzker was trying to defend the most gerrymandered state in the country, where Illinois literally looks like a pretzel had sex with a scorpion, and then they had a unicorn for a baby when you look at the congressional map.
It is wild,
it was wild. And Kathy Hochul also trying to defend that they try to do the exact same thing till a judge shot it down. And then this is from last week. You have a compilation of the media painting Texas Democrats. Now, this is one of yours?
Yeah. This was the reaction to Democrats like fleeing the state, Texas Democrats fleeing the state. And it came out along with like a little mini study that we did where we looked at the number of Texas Democrats that were invited on for interviews on CNN and MSNBC the first like 6 days of August. And we compared that to Republicans. 45 Texas Democrat interviews, 2 for Republicans. And you can probably imagine that the tone of those interviews varied pretty heavily depending on partisan affiliation of the guest.
Well, let's take a watch and a listen. Cut 39.
New threat. Republicans in Texas ramp up their efforts to scare and threaten Democratic lawmakers into returning to the state.
This is wild.
What could this mean for the midterms and democracy itself?
Not good for democracy. Good for the electoral system.
You're in an existential crisis for American democracy, right?
This is, in some ways, the blueprint for how democracy ends up getting lost.
What's happening in Texas right now is not normal. This is unprecedented.
Unprecedented.
Totally unprecedented.
This is a blatant power grab.
This seems like a power grab.
Lots of people are angry over the potential power grab.
The Republican power grab that's unfolding in the state.
The congressman is clearly correct. This is a power grab.
Fighting Donald Trump's power grab.
One of the Texas Democrats leading the fight against that, against Donald Trump's power grab, will be our next guest.
Democratic dreams. How far will they go to block a takeover in Texas?
As always, Bill, great work. Bill D'Agostino, follow him on X at @band_Bill. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thanks as always, Rich. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Cioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
And we'll be there live on Friday for our next live show and the last show of the summer. We are not back at the Grand Hotel until Halloween night, October 31st. So come out on Friday, 3 to 7 p.m. The bar will be open. Won't be an open bar, but it will be open. And we'll have a lot of fun. You don't need a ticket. You don't need a reservation. Just come for yourself and see how beautiful the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey really is. Okay? I'll see you there on Friday. Make sure you join us for that. This is pretty funny because Eric Holder was on Meet the Press and said gerrymandering is a threat to democracy. But also we have to gerrymander to save democracy, you see. Cut 16.
Let me ask you, how can gerrymandering both be a threat to democracy and also the way to save it?
Well, there's no question that gerrymandering is a threat to our democracy. It allows politicians to pick their voters as opposed to citizens choosing their representatives. But we are now in a situation where we find ourselves where authoritarian moves are being made by the White House through various states, Texas most prominent among them. And there has to be a response to that. What I've said is that we have to protect our democracy now if we ultimately want to be able to save it. And so taking the reasonable steps that have been proposed in California, I think it makes a great deal of sense in this moment, a temporary way in which to respond to that which is happening in Texas, with the thought that after this crisis has passed, we get back to the fight against gerrymandering by anybody.
Got it. So gerrymandering to destroy democracy and gerrymandering to save democracy. And here is, how many times has this guy run and failed, Matt DeSantis? Like 11 times? Is 11 the number for Beto O'Rourke?
He ran for Senate and lost. He ran for governor and lost. He ran for president and lost.
I also believe he lost. He ran for president of his local Rotary Club and also lost. Or maybe it was the Kiwanis. I forget. Here's Beto saying, F the rules. Take over any way possible. This guy just does not know how to go away, man. He just does not know what to do. He can't go away. Cut 17.
You're not going to let him stop us. Are you with me on that? Andale. It also means, as Mark was saying earlier, we don't await the punch thrown by these would-be fascists to land. We punch first, and we punch harder. We want California and New Jersey and Illinois and Maryland and every other state where the Democrats hold the governor's mansion, the assembly, and the state senate to redraw their congressional districts now, not wait for Texas to move first, to maximize Democratic Party advantage. Listen, you may say to yourself, well, those aren't the rules. There are no refs in this game. F*** the rules. We are going to win whatever it takes. We're going to take this to him in every way that we can.
What's his real name, Matt? It's not Beto. I love when he does his fake Spanish. What's his real name again? Do you remember?
Off the top of my head, I think it's Robert, but let me double check.
Yeah, Robert Francis O'Rourke.
Thank you, Justin. Robert Francis O'Rourke. who goes by Beto because it makes him sound like he's Spanish. And then he goes out there and he winds up with that bad Spanish accent. Robert Francis. And he, you know what he says to people all the time? Don't call me Robert Francis. That's what he says. That's what I'm just saying. That's what he says all the time. He speaks fluently and he's bilingual. There you go. Bilingual. And socialist Zoran Mamdani has officially endorsed Mikey Sherrill for governor of New Jersey in a great gift to Republican Jack Cittarelli, who will be on the show next week, by the way. Matt, he'll be on with us next Thursday at 3:30 p.m. I forgot to text you that. But yeah, next Thursday, the 21st at 3:30 p.m.
Thank you for that, Jeff.
No problem. So here he is endorsing Mikey Sherrill. Beautiful gift for Jack Cittarelli to have that Marxist kook cut 19.
We're focused on an economic agenda that will make the most expensive city in the United States affordable.
Yeah, across the river, a state you'd have to work very closely with, there's a race for governor of New Jersey. Mikey Sherrill is the congresswoman there. She's a centrist Democrat. There are many centrist Democrats looking at this race over here, very particular. Would you support her?
Absolutely.
And the reason I ask these questions about the political party is because when it comes to the midterms, and say you are the mayor, do you think folks are going to look at you and say it's either a plus or a minus for the Democratic Party? And how do you kind of come to reckon with that?
Look, we know that Republicans will look to focus on this city no matter who is in charge. We've seen that especially with the current mayor who, under indictment, was facing.
Well, there you go. So now we have more to talk about with our buddy Gerald Posner, allegations of money laundering at the Vatican. He wrote the book God's Bankers. We'll talk to him about it. And also, listen, when it comes to your smile, you need to have a wonderful, wonderful dentist. You need my guy. My guy, of course, is Dr. Mike Veneria, Veneria Dental. He's the best of the best. You know why? Because it's about care and compassion. And that's why, for 12 years, other dentists have recognized Dr. Mike as the master of implant dentistry, the master of giving you that beautiful smile that you deserve. And I want you to see him. He's my whole family's dentist. That's right. I go to him. Bridget goes to him. Reagan, Patrick, and Claire go to him. And Mom is the only discovered him. But his specialty and the reason why the experts call Dr. Mike Veneria the expert is because his specialty is those really complex dental procedures. So if you've been putting it off, stop putting it off. If you had a second, if you had a consult with somebody else, get a second opinion with Dr. Mike. But please don't go to one of these chain dental offices and don't go to the closest dentist. Go to the best. He has two locations for you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury, right across the river. Easy to get to over the bridge. And he has been giving people beautiful smiles, and that's why they keep coming back. Bridget got a great smile from Dr. Mike last year. She had to replace her veneers, he put on caps, and her smile has never looked better. So trust the guy who my whole family depends on for their smile, and get your free implant consultation today with the guy other dentists call when it comes to the really complex stuff. That's Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So a story today I saw about possible money laundering at the Vatican. So I thought I'd bring on the guy who wrote the book, God's Bankers. He, of course, is the one and only Gerald Posner. And it's a pleasure to have him on. Although now that your wife, Trisha, has been on the show, she might be my favorite Posner. I'm just saying.
You know what, Rich? If Trisha is your favorite Posner, you'd be in very good company. I think that that is about the general consensus among everybody that has come across the two of us. So, yeah, two thumbs up on that.
Understood. No, it was great chatting with her after she went to London, wrote a great piece in The New York Post about how if Zoran Mamdani wins, New York is going to turn into London. And it was amazing listening to her talk about the no-go zones and how that's a real thing. Because, you know, they told us those were that was a big conspiracy.
You know, isn't that fantastic? They said that no-go zones don't exist. And as a matter of fact, what she discovered is there are plenty of areas and neighborhoods inside of London in all types of different from mid-level to lower income in which you do not feel safe entering that neighborhood, especially as a Western woman, or as she would be as a white British woman, you clearly are made to feel uncomfortable getting in there. And there's informal Sharia practices in which they actually have these courts set up around Sharia courts in which they settle things like property disputes, marriage disputes, items like that outside of the civil court. So they avoid the British legal system. They're running a parallel legal system inside these small communities. And if you don't call that a no-go zone, then I'm not quite sure what you call it.
Yeah, well said. Absolutely. And she also brought to light the fact that there are people there who are pushing for Sharia law to take effect in London, and that the culture is basically gone. And I mean, it's heartbreaking to hear.
Yeah, I mean, there are imams inside the Muslim community are calling for the establishment of Sharia law inside of Britain. It's a Western country with a long tradition. It's common law country that we've taken our own laws from. It's certainly not Sharia law. And the amazing thing is, since she published that piece in the New York Post a week ago, a Sunday, it was a week ago. I have to say to people, stop sending the either videos or pictures. She's getting through direct messages, videos and photos sent from people in the UK to her to say, oh, by the way, somebody sent me a copy of your piece. You think what you saw is bad. Wait till I show you my local shopping center. Wait till I show you what's happening here in this community center. People are sending her videos of what I call this dominance of the Muslim and Middle Eastern culture that seems, and we're not talking about just one neighborhood in Britain. We went around because we hadn't been there in so long. You know, I used to visit to see her mother and her family for 20 years. We were back there 4 to 6 weeks a year. And then we hadn't been back in 20 years because her mother had died a long time ago. And we saw this massive change. Trisha saw it as somebody who was raised there, was her hometown. And, you know, we just had somebody come back here who's a doctor in Miami who said to Trisha today, I was there. He said, I thought you were exaggerating in your piece. I just got back from London. I realized you weren't.
Unbelievable. Gerald Posner, you are the author of God's Bankers. And everything I know about the Vatican Bank, I learned from either watching Godfather Part 3, when Michael Corleone tries to go legit, and Immobiliari, and reading God's Bankers. So when I saw the story today about Vatican under fire for alleged money laundering dodge, I thought, you're the guy to talk about it and come on the show. And I saw that you did post something on X at Gerald Posner. So first of all, I mean, look, I'm Catholic, and, you know, I grew up Catholic, but I understand, like all organizations that are run by human beings, men, they're subject to corruption. And the Vatican Bank, of course, is no exception to that. So tell us about God's Bankers and what this bank is really like.
So, Rich, I'm also Catholic. You know, I was raised by Sisters of Charity in grammar school and then Jesuits in high school. That's where I went wrong, was the Jesuits in high school.
But, probably, yeah.
Yeah, right. it seems to me that I understood, and when I wrote God's Bankers, I said, this is not about religion. It's not about, whether this is the one and true faith on the earth for against all religions. This is about the other side of the Catholic Church, which is when it runs as a sovereign government, which it is. We forget about that. It's not only the home of 1.6 billion Catholics, but it is its own government. And it has been for centuries. It used to have the papal states, an entire empire. Now it's just a postage stamp piece of property. And they formed a bank in the middle of World War II called the Vatican Bank because they didn't want the British and the Americans, who were looking for neutral countries, the Vatican was neutral, who were doing business with the Germans or the Italian government under Mussolini. So the Vatican created its own central bank, sort of like a central bank, a J.P. Morgan, all mixed into one. And they were able to go off the radar and do all types of business off the shelf, which they were able to hide. And then over the years, it became an outpost for money laundering. And as I said, it was a money laundering bank, an offshore bank in the heart of Rome, used by the mafia, by bankers that try to take advantage of it. And then finally, it tried to clean up its act. There were under Pope Francis more than any other pope. It's now open to European regulators. It has cleaned up a lot. The bad old, what I call the cocaine cowboy days of the Vatican Bank are over. So this story caught many of us by surprise, in a sense, that you have the former Auditor General of the Vatican in 2015 saying, by the way, I know that they have a skeleton key, as he calls it, to be able to change a wire. So when a wire is sent, they can change the SWIFT code after the fact. They can change the person who's receiving it. They can change the encrypted information. And so they can disguise who's getting the money. And that way they can do money laundering today. Now, because we know the sort of scandalous history of the Vatican Bank, your first reaction is, oh, is it possible they went back to the bad old days? The reason I'm skeptical on this story is this is also a guy who was fired from his job in 2017. He has a lawsuit against the Vatican for wrongful dismissal for $10 million. His suit was dismissed by the Vatican courts. He's appealed. It was dismissed again. So now he's held a press conference in which he says, I've got these documents that show they're really still doing money laundering as of 2015. And I want to talk to Pope Leo to straighten this all out. So it might just be a great negotiating tactic. I do think that if he's right in any sense, I have no doubt that Pope Leo will put a stop to it, because nobody today wants to go back to the bad old days.
No, and certainly not a guy who's a Villanova graduate.
That, on top of everything else, I think they brought, you know, one of the reasons they didn't want an American as the Pope over there is because they thought, oh, the Americans are all involved in money all the time. Now they're happy they have an American because he's got an eye not only on the finances, but they know that he can raise money. And let me tell you something, donations to the Pope, okay, they come under a thing called Peter's Pence, are a big deal in the Vatican City. They rely on that often. And the more popular the Pope, the better the finances are. And they started to fall off at the end of Francis's tenure. So a lot of people in Vatican City are looking for a bump in the donations because of Pope Leo. He's popular. He's very personable. And they think that because he's American, he will be able to go after some of those big American donations and philanthropists and open up the doors to a big charity. He might be able to do that.
I would imagine so. You know, every time I meet a friend who's an alumni of Villanova, the first thing they say is that they got the Pope. So I turn around and say, well, have you written a check yet? You know, I mean, like, it's not just the Villanova Alumni Fund calling now. Now it's also the Roman Catholic Church. So
no, that's absolutely true. And I know this well enough that you could be a Villanova graduate and you think you have the Pope. But if you were a graduate from a competing school, you write a large enough check as a donation to the Vatican, you'll jump ahead of all the Villanova graduates being invited to have a special blessing in Vatican City.
Gerald Posner is with us. All right. So we'll take this this guy's allegations with a huge grain of salt and see what comes of this. I wanted to ask you your reaction to Chairman James Comer, the House Oversight Committee, dropping subpoenas into Jeffrey Epstein and going after former attorneys general, former President Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and a number of other people.
Look, I mean, I think that I know a lot of people aren't ready for the political upheaval that this will cause. I get it. But there's no doubt that it just has to be pursued. And you know, I say that as somebody, somebody who's made a career by never stopping, sort of going the extra length when somebody says, oh, enough, you know, don't keep chasing the story. You want to keep chasing it. The only way we're going to find out here is if these subpoenas are served, we get the information. And I think that Comer thinks that that will be one for the ages. Now, whether there is or not, we have to wait until we see the information and the facts. But there's certainly enough smoke here. And I think that this is the next logical step.
It's hard to imagine any of these people actually saying anything at all. I mean, you know, that's the problem here. But I wonder, you know, in conjunction with the Justice Department, if some people are given immunity. And, you know, between this and the Russia hoax, and, you know, now we're exposing all these people. Like, I mean, I find it laughable that there's anybody out there who's saying that we're a police state or an authoritarian government by wanting to hold people in power accountable for abusing their power and using law enforcement or intelligence for political purposes. Like, that infuriates me and gets under my blood, you know?
This is what third world dictatorships do. This is what happens when you act all the time. We've witnessed this in America. We've watched other countries with tin pot dictators go ahead and use their police and their security services and others to go after their political enemies and to destroy them. And that happens time and again. We thought in many ways that we were immune from that happening in America. Now, no matter what people think, I say to my friends who are Democrats who don't like Trump, I say, you know, you've got to pull the lens back a little bit because the system went after him. It tried to destroy him every way to Sunday. They put him on trial in New York for charges that could never have been brought. They had to, you know, make those into charges essentially to bring against him. They'd never been brought before. They were looking for anything to be able to convict him to eventually say the other charges all pending. They used the system time and again to try to destroy him because they were afraid of exactly what would happen, which is if they did not destroy him, he would come back. He would run and he would win. And so they used that system, that security, him down. And now that it might be exposed, there are people shouting, oh, well, don't continue to look into this because it's just political payback. It's all about political payback at a certain point, because I get it, it's politics.
Sure.
And if you don't think politics is a hardball game, then you're crazy. But in this case, the question is whether they went over the line and actually broke the law. And I agree with you on Russiagate as well. We just don't know those answers yet.
Switching gears for a second, Gerald Posner, you wrote the book on pharma, which exposed incredible things about the power of pharma. Now that we have new people there, Jay Bhattacharya, we've got Marty McCarry, and obviously Robert Kennedy. I know it's only been 8 months. What do you make so far of all of this? Because, I mean, it seems like every 2 seconds, there's another article about how many people are on a GLP-1 weight loss drug. Like, there's an article in the New York Post today about how it will turn back the aging process. I mean, and we were joking around earlier on the show about this because it's like, wow, someday we're all going to wake up and find out that these things turn you into zombies, because it's like it's almost like too good to be true. You know what I mean? But what do you make so far of the pharmaceutical industry's power at this moment? Has there been any change whatsoever?
Yeah, there have been changes, but they remember, I think the key is what you just said, Rich, 8 months in. So everything isn't going to turn overnight. Pharma's had an incredible amount of power for a long time because they have been very smart. They haven't just bought the compliance of one party. They bought the compliance of both parties. They had individuals both in the Republicans and in the Democratic Party who they made significant contributions to, who were there ready to fight for them. Now they have more of an uphill battle with Bobby Kennedy and others, Markari, in those positions. And I think that on the one hand, we see them pushing on the GLP-1 drugs nonstop. You're absolutely right. So the question is for them, the holy grail, what do they want more than vaccines and everything else? They want Medicare and Medicaid to cover the GLP-1s just for obesity, to go ahead and cover them so that they're covered fully. And then that will make sure that the government is spending a lot of money on those drugs. And the argument will be, if you get people to lose weight who are morbidly obese, the system will save money, have diabetes and heart disease and all these other things that cost the system so much money. So, you know, we'll see. But you're absolutely right. Everything's being thrown in the kitchen sink. But on the other hand, while that's still happening, I do see things in terms of vaccines. The administration is making pharma say, you're going to have to, A, show the efficacy of these vaccines one way or the other before you just get a green light to go ahead and market them. More responsibility eventually for liability issues if they arise, if you happen to know about them. Those would be sea changes in terms of what's happening. So I see things to be pleased with in terms of somebody who's been a critic of the pharmaceutical industry and what's happening under the Trump administration. And the greatest thing that Trump has done is, in my view, signing an executive order where he says, I'm going to negotiate the prices with the top 20 biggest pharma companies. I'm going to bring them down by substantial amounts. Now, there's a big difference between signing that EO and actually getting it done. I understand that. But I will tell you that he sent a chill through the boardroom of every pharma CEO a month ago when he did that, because you have a president who for the first time is saying, I want lower pharma prices.
Yeah, and he's got the power of leverage to be able to bring them to the table, no doubt about it, given Medicaid and Medicare, among other things. Gerald Posner, always a pleasure, my friend. Follow him on X, at Gerald Posner, and get his books, all of them. They're great. They're fantastic. And GeraldPosner.com. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
Rich, great to see you. Talk soon.
Great
Thanks.
To see you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
As we continue along here, the big story of the day brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneri of VeneriaDental.com. Two locations serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Go see him today for your perfect smile. I'm going to get into a lot in the next hour regarding D.C., in case you're just joining us and you missed us. But we are going to be live in Cape May on Friday at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. So make sure you join us for that. It'll be a lot of fun and we'll have a great time. So make sure you come and join us. But we were talking earlier in the show about we were talking about a lot of different things earlier, but, you know, we spent a lot of time on that. One thing I do want to get into with you is this whack job, nutbag, lunatic woman who has a podcast or something, I don't know, and told everybody who's a Trump supporter to just eat a Cracker Barrel. So we're going to get into that in the fourth and final hour, and I'll also recap the D.C. stuff with you as well, just in case you have not heard the big story, which is that President Trump now sending in the National Guard and using law enforcement to be able to go into D.C. and try to clean up the joint. So there you go. And it's what has to happen. Of course, the left is, you know, melting down about it, as you would imagine. But Friday's going to be fun in Cape May, and it's our last show of the summer. And we won't be back there again until October 31st for Halloween. So come out and see us if you have not yet had a chance to come to a live show. You don't know what you're missing. If you've come to more and if you've come to some in the past, then come again because you love it and it's fun and you make new friends and it's always a blast. So coming up, another raving Trump derangement syndrome woman, this time accusing you of being racist and saying you only belong at Cracker Barrel. And Trump says to D.C., enough is enough. I'm cracking down on crime. All that is straight ahead in our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.